I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful.
Hey, everybody. My name is Christopher Ash, and you're here with the First Amendment Podcast. Let's get to it. Now, since this is my first official podcast, I feel we should take the time to get acquainted with one another. Again, my name is Christopher Ash. I was born and raised for the first 10 years of my life in Central Florida. I was born in DeLand. I grew up in Palatka until about the age of 4, as I remember it. Then my family moved to Ormond Beach. We spent a little bit of time there. We wound up in Daytona for a little bit. And then before I had left Florida at the age of 10, for a span of about 17 years, I was in Edgewater. After Edgewater, my family had moved to Maine. So I got some elementary school teaching from the South. And then I got the rest of my schooling in the North. So I got moved to Central Maine, like I said, at the age of 10. That's where I would receive my middle school and high school education, some college. After that, I went from Central Maine. I moved myself to Southern Maine, around the Berwick area. After Berwick, I found myself in Rollinsford, New Hampshire. After Rollinsford, I found myself in Dover, New Hampshire for a moment. And then I spent a couple years in Boston, and right outside Boston, in Quincy. Once I had had my 12-year fill of the Northeast, I decided I wanted to take a trip to Las Vegas. It was only meant to be a scouting trip, but once there, I told my roommates who had just graduated from Le Cordon Bleu, the cooking school, that they had a month to move out. I left all my stuff in Boston, and within a month, I had two places in Las Vegas. I ended up staying in Las Vegas for about 5 years, 2012 to 2017. After a tragic incident, and as I found Vegas becoming more and more like the Vegas you might think it really is, I sought another environment change, and I moved myself back to Florida. Now, when I grew up in Florida, though, I had grown up on the east coast of Florida. I think I'd been to Tampa one time in my life growing up, or maybe like a handful of times because of Busch Gardens. The wife I would end up marrying at the time was living in Tampa, so that's where we went, where we got our house. She had two daughters, I had kids, so it made sense. Lived in that house for a few years. After Tampa, I actually momentarily had given up my address, and I was traveling mainly abroad between Germany and Spain for a span of almost 9 months. Wound up back in Florida, Central, Kissimmee to be specific. And I was there for a year. I was there in Kissimmee through the pandemic. And then I got another place in Kissimmee. Then I ended up getting a place in Jacksonville. Ended up giving up my place last March in Jacksonville and spent the majority of last year in South America, Colombia. And now I'm back in Central Florida. Bravo me, huh? As I sit here, I'm 36 years of age. My primary occupation for the past 15 years, you can say, has been an adult entertainer. To just give it an umbrella. Now, aside from my adult industry experience, I've been somebody who's always been kind of a avid constitutionalist. I've been someone, when we were in civics class in middle school and in high school, I thoroughly paid attention. I read the court cases that were given to us, and I certainly asked a lot of questions so I could thoroughly understand what it was I needed to understand being a citizen of the United States of America and, you know, what are my rights that I have that will allow me to capture, to live the life that I would like to live. And I feel this podcast going forward, what I would like to do is not only chronologically track my spiritual journey, let's call it, or not even call it a spiritual journey, your God mind, your sense of what God is to you, even if you are an atheist, that's your God mind, yet you're at the point you just don't believe. That is the freedom of religion aspect of the First Amendment. We're also going to be exploring a lot of examples of what it means to have free speech, especially as we're entering a time in the United States history where I think we can all feel nefarious forces closing in on one of our most protected rights in this country. So thank you for being here with me. And thank you for joining me on this journey. I hope only ever to bring knowledge and advice and information that I consider to be universally applicable, sensible, and of good humanity. So what I kind of think my mission here ultimately, besides connecting with people, is to empower individuals by providing comprehensive, accessible, and engaging resources like on their First Amendment rights. So we're going to be committed to enlightening citizens about their freedom of speech, press, religion, assembly, petition, ensuring a well-informed public capable of advocating for their own rights and responsibilities in a democratic society. So through this platform, we're going to aim to foster a deeper understanding of these fundamental liberties, encourage critical thinking, and support active participation in civic life, regardless of background or belief. It's my firm belief that an informed populace is the cornerstone of a thriving democracy. So getting into our First Amendment, what is covered? Well, let's go through it, shall we? Freedom of religion. Now, I'm going to go through the key aspects first of the First Amendment. Then I'm going to bring you through a little bit more detailed descriptions of these rights that you have under the Constitution of the United States of America. And I'm even going to give you court case examples so we can answer some of the questions that may be out there pertaining to certain aspects of the language that is in our Constitution. As I said, first up, freedom of religion. This includes the freedom to practice any religion of one's choice or no religion at all. That prohibits the establishment of a state religion or preference of one religion over another by the government. And if you have any questions, feel free to hit me up. If any of this language sounds confusing to you, one of the things you have to know about the Constitution before we go forward, as written, it could be one of the most sound documents in modern history. But it is left up to interpretation. And that's where the greed of men come into play. Moving on. Freedom of speech. This provides the right to express one's opinions and ideas without fear of government censorship or punishment. It's one of the most cherished rights, but it does have some limitations. As such, for speech that incites violence or is defamatory. Meaning, you can speak truth. What you can't do is say stuff, threaten, say things that would cause violence, threaten somebody's life or their safety, or just blatantly make up lies about somebody. Now, the freedom of press. This allows for the dissemination of information and opinions through various media without government control or restrictions. It's essential for a free and informed society and includes the right to publish newspapers, TV, radio, and other forms of media. Moving on. Freedom to assemble peacefully. The right allows people to gather for peaceful and lawful purposes. It's crucial for a functioning democracy, allowing for protest, rallies, and public demonstrations. Next up, we have the freedom to petition the government for redress of grievances. Okay? This provides individuals and groups the right to bring their concerns and complaints to the government's attention and seek remedies. So it is not illegal for millions of people to demand the government change its ways. As I said, I'm going to loop back through these now. And let's get into a little bit more about what each one covers. Now, the freedom to religion. The Establishment Clause of Freedom to Religion. This clause prohibits the government from establishing an official religion, favoring one religion over another, or unduly involving itself in religious activities or doctrines. Essentially, it ensures a separation of church and state. The Free Exercise Clause. This clause protects individuals' rights to practice their religion as they please without undue interference from the government. It means that people can hold any religious belief or non-belief, and the government generally cannot force them to act against those beliefs. Several significant court cases have shaped the understanding and application of freedom of religion in the United States, such as Everson versus Board of Education. This case addressed the Establishment Clause and involved state funding for transportation to religious schools. The Supreme Court held that New Jersey law allowing the funding did not violate the Establishment Clause, but also set a precedent for a strict separation of church and state. In Engel versus Vitale in 1962, this case dealt with the recitation of prayers in public schools. The Supreme Court ruled that it's unconstitutional for state officials to compose an official school prayer and encourage its recitation in public schools. It violates the Establishment Clause. In Lemon versus Kurtzman in 1971, this case led to the creation of the Lemon Test, a three-pronged test used to assess if government action violates the Establishment Clause. For the law to pass the test, it must have a secular purpose, not advance or inhibit religion, and not result in excessive government entanglement with religion. Employment Division versus Smith in 1990. In this case, the Supreme Court ruled that the Free Exercise Clause does not exclude individuals for complying with neutral, generally applicable laws, even if those laws infringe on their religious beliefs. This decision significantly narrowed the scope of protections under the Free Exercise Clause. Lastly here, in Burwell versus Hobby Lobby Stores in 2014, this case involved a for-profit corporation seeking an exemption from a law, the Affordable Care Act, requiring employers to offer health insurance that covers contraception. This is the abortion issue. On the grounds of religious freedoms or beliefs, the Supreme Court ruled that closely held for-profit corporations can be exempt from laws that violate their religious beliefs under the Religion Freedom Restoration Act. These cases illustrate the ongoing and evolving nature of how freedom of religion is understood and applied in the United States. They show the balance that courts often strike between individual religious freedoms and the interest of the states. All right. Now, my personal favorite in the First Amendment is the freedom of speech. Now, what kind of speech is protected by the First Amendment exactly? First up, we got political speech. This is perhaps the most highly protected form of speech. The ability to criticize the government, debate policies, and express opinions on political matters is fundamental to the democratic society. Next up, we have symbolic speech. This includes actions and symbols that communicate a message without using words. Example include wearing armbands to protest the war. Think Tinker versus Des Moines, an independent community school district. Burning the American flag as a form of political protest, as in Texas versus Johnson, and other nonverbal expressions. Now you have artistic expression, which is art, music, literature, and other forms of creative expression that are protected. This protection covers a wide range of artistic work, even those that might be controversial or offensive to some. Commercial speech. This refers to speech or messages that primarily involve the advertising and promotion of commercial products and services. While not strongly protected as political or artistic speech, commercial speech still enjoys considerable protection under the First Amendment. Hate speech. Now, I know a lot of you are saying, well, hate speech isn't allowed in the United States of America. You're actually dead fucking wrong. Hate speech in the United States is generally protected under the First Amendment, unless it crosses into direct threats, fighting words, or incitement to lawless actions. This distinguishes U.S. free speech protections from those in many other countries where hate speech may be more regulated. Speech in public forums. The First Amendment protects speech in public forums like streets, parks, and public squares. The government can impose time, place, and manner restrictions on speech in these areas, but these restrictions must be content neutral. Meaning, you can't say that you can only yell pro-vaccine stuff here, but anti-vaccine stuff here is not allowed. Content neutral. I mean, whatever rule, you can't control the content, you can only control the time, place, blah, blah, blah. So these restrictions must be content neutral, narrowly tailored, serve a significant governmental interest, and leave open ample alternative channels of communication. Parody and satire. Parodic and satirical expressions, even when they target public figures or popular brands, are protected under the First Amendment as a form of social commentary. Now, some relevant court cases. You have Schneck versus the United States in 1919. This case established the clear and present danger test for determining when speech could be restricted. The court held that speech creating a clear and present danger of significant evils that Congress has the power to prevent can be restricted. Brandenburg versus Ohio, 1969. This case refined the standard for regulating inflammatory speech. The court held that the government cannot punish inflammatory speech unless it is directed to inciting and is likely to incite imminent lawless action. Miller versus California, 1973. This case created the Miller test for obscenity, which assesses whether speech or materials are obscene and therefore unprotected. New York Times versus Sullivan in 1964. This case established the actual malice standard for press reports about public officials or public figures to be considered defamation or libel. Tinker versus Des Moines Independent Community School District, 1969. This case held that students do not shed their constitutional rights to freedom of speech or expression at the school gate, and is notable for protecting students' rights to express themselves as long as it does not disrupt school activities. Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission, 2010. This case held that the First Amendment prohibits the government from restricting independent expenditures for political communications by corporations, including nonprofit corporations, labor unions, and other associations. Now that we got free speech out of the way, we're going to jump into freedom of press. So the first important thing about freedom of press, publishing without government censorship or prior restraint. This is the fundamental right that prevents the government from censoring or interfering with the content of publications before they are released. It ensures that the press can publish news, opinions, and other information without fear of government suppression. News gathering. The press has a right to collect information essential to informing the public. This includes the gathering of facts, recording or reporting on events, and interviewing individuals. The right to news gathering, obviously, is a crucial part for investigative journalism. The protection of confidential sources. Journalists often rely on confidential sources to gather information, especially in cases involving sensitive or controversial subjects. The First Amendment has been interpreted to offer some level of protection for journalists to keep their sources confidential, though this is not absolute. Access to public forums and information. The media has the right to access public forums like city council meetings and certain government-held information, which is crucial for reporting on government activities and holding officials accountable. The editorial independence and autonomy. The press has the freedom to decide editorial content and direction, free from government influence or control. This autonomy is essential for a free and independent media. Now, some court cases. You have Neer versus Minnesota, 1931. This landmark decision held that prior restraints on publication is unconstitutional. The case established the principle that the government cannot prohibit the press from publishing in advance, which is a cornerstone of press freedom. You have New York Times versus the United States, 1971, commonly known as the Pentagon Papers. In this case, the Supreme Court ruled that the Nixon administration attempted to prevent the New York Times and Washington Post from publishing classified information about the Vietnam War that was unconstitutional prior restraint. The case reinforced the principle that the government carries a heavy burden of proof when attempting to impose restrictions on the press, even in the context of national security. Brandsburg versus Hayes, 1972. While this case did not fully grant journalists the right to protect their sources in front of grand juries, it acknowledged the vital role of news gathering and reporting in a democratic society. The decision led to various states adopting shield laws that provide varying degrees of protection for journalistic sources. Cox Broadcasting Corporation versus Cohen, 1975. The Supreme Court held that the First Amendment protects the media when reporting information obtained from public records. This case underscores the press's role in disseminating lawfully acquired information of public significance. Richmond Newspaper versus Virginia, 1980. This case established the principle that the press and the public have a First Amendment right to attend criminal trials. The decision highlighted the importance of transparency in the judicial process and the role of the press in ensuring public oversight of the judiciary. Moving on to freedom of peaceful assembly. Now, first off, one, the right to gather. The First Amendment guarantees individuals and groups the right to come together in public and private spaces to express their views. This encompasses protest, demonstrations, political rallies, and public meetings. The right to express collective views. Assemblies are often platforms for expressing collective viewpoints on various issues, including political, social, and economic concerns. This collective expression is a fundamental aspect of the right to assemble. The use of public spaces, public forums, like streets, parks, and public squares, are typical venues for peaceful assembly. The use of these spaces for assembly is strongly protected under the First Amendment. Right to organize and mobilize. Peaceful assembly includes the ability to organize and mobilize people for various causes, be it political campaigns, social movements, or community gatherings. Symbolic assemblies. This right also extends to symbolic gatherings like vigils or processions, which may be significant in conveying certain messages or corroborating events. Now, your court cases that back up and clarify some things. We have DeJong versus Oregon in 1937. This case was pivotal in establishing the peaceful assembly for lawful discussion cannot be made a crime. Repeat that again. It established that the peaceful assembly for lawful discussion cannot be made a crime. The court held that the right to peaceful assembly is a fundamental right, just as the freedom of speech or freedom of press. Edwards versus South Carolina, 1963. The Supreme Court overturned the convictions of African American students who had peacefully protested against segregation. This case reinforced that states cannot unduly restrict the right to peacefully assemble on public grounds. United States versus Grace, 1983. In this case, the Supreme Court held that streets and sidewalks are traditional public forms, and the government's ability to regulate expressive activities in such venues is very limited. The Hague versus Committee for Industrial Organization. This case addressed the issue of public assemblies in streets and public parks. The court ruled that public spaces and places like streets and parks are open for assembly and debate, highlighting the importance of these venues for public expression. You have the NAACP versus Alabama in 1958. While this case focused more on association rights, it's relevant to assembly rights. The Supreme Court protected NCAA's right to privately assemble and keep its membership list confidential, recognizing the close nexus between freedom of association and freedom of assembly. You having fun here? All right, now we got the freedom to petition the government for redress of grievances. What is this about? Let's get into the detail here, right? One, the right to approach the government. Individuals and groups have the right to contact, communicate with, and request action from their government representatives, departments, and agencies. This includes the ability to lobby, send letters, make phone calls, and use digital platforms to express views and requests. Public petitioning and advocacy. The right to petition encompasses public forms of advocacy, such as organizing and signing petitions, staging peaceful demonstrations, or public lobbying to bring attention to issues and influence government action. The use of courts for redress. The right to petition extends to the judicial system, allowing individuals and organizations to file lawsuits against the government for legal grievances, including challenging laws and regulations that they believe infringe upon their rights. Protection against retaliation. Individuals exercising their right to petition are protected against retaliation from the government. This means that citizens cannot be punished or treated unfairly for lawfully petitioning their government. Group and individual petitioning. This right is not limited to individuals but extends to groups, associations, and organizations, allowing collective action and advocacy. Now, some relative court cases here to clarify some things for this. You have United Mine Workers versus the Illinois State Bar Association in 1967. This case reaffirmed that non-lawyers could represent union members in court, underscoring the broad scope of the right to petition, including seeking redress in judicial settings. California Motor Transport Company versus Trucking Unlimited, 1972. The Supreme Court recognized that the right to petition extends to administrative and judicial proceedings, In this case, the court held that it was unlawful to use government processes like courts or regulatory agencies as a means to suppress competition, thereby affirming the right to petition in various legal and regulatory contexts. Yet McDonald versus Smith, 1985. This case involved a claim of defamation based on a letter written to the president. The Supreme Court held that the right to petition does not provide absolute immunity from defamation claims, but it emphasized that the importance of the right to freely communicate with government officials. B.E.K. Construction Company versus the National Labor Relations Board, 2002. In this case, the Supreme Court ruled that companies have the right to petition courts and cannot be penalized for making legal arguments, even if those arguments are ultimately unsuccessful, reinforcing the right to use legal channels to seek redress. Eastern Railroad President Conference versus Noir Motor Freight Incorporation, 1961. Known as the Noir Pennington Doctrine, this case established that the Sherman Antitrust Act does not prohibit groups from organizing together to petition the government, even if their actions might have anti-competitive effects. So there you have it. For today's episode, little brief introduction, little rundown of the First Amendment. Again, getting into my background here with adult education, I've also been in fitness for over 25 years. I've been a musician now for about 15 years. I've traveled the world. You could say I am on a journey of truth, and I consider myself to be very fortunate to have the people that I have in my life that bring to me a universal knowledge that has been just helpful in ways that I still have yet to fully grasp. So thank you for listening today on the introductory podcast episode of the First Amendment Podcast. I'll see you guys next time.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation.